Hello, everybody, and welcome to
Should I Love This Comic?
Hello, we are here today. It's me again, Damien Drouet-Whiter. And who do I have with me?
You have Irrigail Drouet-Whiter.
I do. And we're here today to continue our little odyssey through the Marvel comics that were dated November 1986. And this time we've decided to alight on Web of Spider-Man number 20. This book had a cover date of November 1986. And was on sale on the 22nd of July, 1986. So you would have been a little 11-year-old when this was released.
I would,
yes. Only just. And I was 12 when I bought it.
12. I'm his toy boy.
Definitely. And this comic is called Little Wars. Now, it actually has no credits at all on the comic. It doesn't say who wrote it, who drew it. We do know from interviews and stuff that it was written by David Michelinie and penciled by Mark Silvestri. Now, it appears to be inked by a number of different inkers. And amongst the ones who have shared pages online that said, oh, I inked this page, are the artists Art Nichols, Kyle Baker, Bob McLeod and Joseph Rubinstein. But there could quite possibly be more, I'm not quite sure. There doesn't seem to be any definite on who the inkers were. It was lettered by Rick Parker and coloured by Bob Sharon, who coloured pretty much every Spider-Man comic for about 20 years, so that's an easy one. As far as editors, the associate editor was Maddie Blaustein, and the editor was Christopher Priest. And the cover art is by John Romita Sr. Now, just a little note, we've already covered a Spider-Man book, haven't we?
We have.
And I let myself get very confused on the previous one by going backwards and forwards about editor names, because the editor changed his name, and he's known now as Christopher Brace. And the associate editor, she was known as Maddie Blaustein. Unfortunately, she died a few years ago. But they both changed their names from what they were called at the time that the comic was written. But I'm going to use their more recent names just to keep things simple, and so I'm calling everybody by just one name. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
I mentioned we've previously looked at a Spider-Man comic, and we've been talking in general when we've been covering this era. We're calling it Should I Love This Era. Mm-hmm. We've talked in general about kind of the downfall of Jim Shooter and how he was on his way out as editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics, and that things were going on behind the scenes in these. So previously, when we looked at Amazing Spider-Man 282, I talked a lot about the breakdown in the relationship between editor Christopher Priest and his writer on Amazing Spider-Man, who was also his boss, Tom DeFalco. Now, Priest was a protege of Jim Shooter and ended up caught between his two bosses. This culminated in Priest firing DeFalco from Amazing Spider-Man. Now, actually, I've gone back to, in prepping this one, I've gone back to his blog, and he ran a series of blogs on his Digital Priest website that were called Adventures in the Funny Book Game, and I've got a couple of quotes I wanted to go through just to give you an idea of how he phrased it, how Christopher Priest said it happened. So he said, I had been told at least a dozen times to fire Tom. Tom was late, Tom was busy, Tom was distracted, and now Tom was not doing his best on Spider-Man. The inker, Joseph Rubinstein, quit. He was annoyed that DeFalco and friends were habitually erratic. I scheduled fill-in after fill-in, which affected sales. Tom and I planned one schedule fix after another, but these efforts were routinely torpedoed by Jim Shooter himself, who suddenly sent Tom here or make Tom drop what he was doing and work on this and so. All the while complaining about our near misses with Tom, urging me to get rid of him. It was Jim himself who was playing havoc with Tom's writing schedule. Finally, I came up with an idea. I would create Sensational Spider-Man by DeFalco and Friends. This would likely have been a quarterly special, like Spider-Man Unlimited or some such. Tom and Ron could do as much Spider-Man as they wanted, and were capable of doing, and we'd be off the hook for the monthly deadline. Tom and Ron continue to do the work they love, and I get out of Shooter's line of fire. I told Jim I was taking Tom off of Amazing and creating this other animal for him and Ron. Jim said fine. Tom took the news very hard. It ended our friendship, and I am told Tom saw Jim's hand in this and threatened to quit. A stunned Shooter appeared at my door the next day, and I knew I was about to be fired. He asked me, and I quote, "Why did you do that?" I just stared at him as he stammered and stared at the floor and shook his head and exhaled. And I felt like I was in The Godfather 2, the victim of some macabre Corleone plot. What the blessed hell was this man talking about? I cleared this all with him before I did it. More to the point, for months he'd been after me to do something about Tom. I said, "Because you told me to. We talked about this beforehand." To which Jim replied, and I'll never forget this, "Yeah, but I never thought you'd actually do it." So what he's saying is his boss was telling him to fire this guy, who was another one of his bosses, and he eventually did it, and then his boss is like, "I didn't think you'd do that." So he was just caught in this kind of office rivalry. So in the articles, he discusses how he became a pariah in the offices. He probably would have ended up being fired anyway, but the deal was sealed by the comic that we're going to look at today, Web of Spider-Man number 20. So he says, "Eventually, I felt like an insane rodent, banging my head into maze walls, driving everyone around me crazy. Stressed out and dazed, we sent out an issue of Michelinie's Web that dealt with the IRA and the politics of Ireland that got us both national attention and a bomb threat. I returned from lunch to find everyone in the building standing on the street while the bomb squad combed the building for explosives. There were none. It was a hoax. But it provided the ammunition for a move to get me out of Marvel. Apparently the cause of the bomb threat was Joy Mercado's summation of Irish history from page 7. Centuries ago, Spanish missionaries converted the Irish population from paganism to Catholicism. So England, afraid that Spain could use Ireland as a base for an invasion, colonised Northern Ireland with Protestants. Ever since, the Republic of Ireland has tried to unify the country by taking over Northern Ireland, which resists and is backed by England, protecting its interests there. This is a shockingly bad history of Ireland. I'm not a historian, but when I read this as a 12-year-old, I already knew that this was a very biased and inaccurate account that would inevitably anger both sides of the Northern Irish conflict. Of course, the story is about Northern Ireland, but it's set in London. So here we get to see how a group of Americans viewed our hometown back in 1986, as well as reading the story that led to Marvel's first black editor being fired. And of course, it was one of the things that hastened the demise of Jim Shooter as editor-in-chief. The chaos caused by this issue did have a positive effect for some of those involved. Because of the fallout from the end of Christopher Priest's editorship, there was a vacancy on the best-selling Amazing Spider-Man, which actually fell to the writer David Michelinie, who had a very successful 7-year run as the primary Spider-Man writer. And the artist of this book, Mark Silvestri, moved over to the X-Men office, where he worked initially on X-Men vs. Avengers, which was a little 6-issue series. Was it 5 issues? It was a limited series, let's say. And then he drew X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, the top X-Men book for 3 years. And then moved on to Wolverine, which he drew for 2 years. Now, during this period, he became so popular that he was one of the artists who founded Image Comics in 1992. He continues to be one of the top artists in the comics industries and is CEO of Image Comics. So, you know, really big role. So, you know, it's, as I say, we've been talking a lot over the last few episodes about this era, you know, that we're calling it Should I Love This Era instead of Should I Love This Comic. And it was an era where Marvel in some ways was falling apart. But when things are going wrong, often that's a way for people to get opportunities, you know. And Mark Silvestri was a very young artist. He'd been working in comics about 3 or 4 years. And it opened up some big jobs for him, some of the stuff that happened. So really good for him. So let's go through the story. It is called Little Wars.
London calling to the faraway towns. Now war is declared and the battle come down. London calling to the underworld. Come out of the cupboard, are you boys and girls? London calling, now don't look to us. Your phony Beatlemania has bitten the dust. London calling, see we ain't got no swing, except for the ring of that truncheon thing. The ice age is coming, the sun's zooming in. Meltdown expected, the wheat is growing thin. Engines stop running, but I have no fear, 'cause London is drowning and I live by the river.
A bomb explodes in London's Heathrow Airport. Welcome to England, Peter Parker. Peter is on an assignment for Now magazine with the writer Joy Mercado. And seeing a gunfight begin, Joy goes looking for the story. One of the men from their flight is firing back at the terrorists. He must be a cop to be allowed to have a gun on a flight. So Joy starts questioning him, but she doesn't get very far. Lady, I'm not in the habit of giving bloody interviews in the middle of a bloody terrorist attack. Now get down or I'll knock you down. Peter wants to get away so he can help a Spider-Man, but he doesn't know how to. Just then, Joy tells him to sneak off and try and get some photos for their article. Peter uses this opportunity to break into a storeroom and put together his web shooters, which he had stored disguised as camera equipment in his case. He uses his web to snatch the last terrorist's gun and then knocks him out. Joy and Peter meet up again and Joy explains that the guy from the plane was a top man at Scotland Yard, and the attackers were members of the IRA. Joy and Peter are asked to leave the area by a policeman, but not before they see a distraught woman despairing over her injured daughter. In the limo on the way from the airport to the hotel, Joy explains Irish history to Peter, who is stunned into silence. At the hotel, Joy and Peter are led to their rooms by a bellboy. "Here you are, Squire, if there's anything else." Peter tips him, but doesn't really understand the coins. "Darn, is a farthing worth more than a shilling? What the heck is a bob?" He gives a handful of coins to the astonished bellboy, who thinks to himself, "Few more like that and I can bloody retire." After a rest in their rooms, Joy and Peter put on some very 80s outfits and go to dinner. When they get back to the hotel, Peter puts on the TV and sees a news report about the injured girl. He decides that he must do more investigation and breaks into the prison cell of one of the surviving terrorists. At the same time, Joy is meeting a mysterious stranger in Hyde Park who sells her some secret documents from the evil corporation Roxxon. The prisoner's information leads Peter to a building where the terrorists, who call themselves the Red Hand, are meeting.
Which is correct.
Yeah.
I thought, like, the Red Hand of Ulster.
Mm.
So they got that bit right.
Yeah. He listens into their conversation, trying to memorise the details. They're going to attack on the following day. Just as they're about to explain what they're going to do, the police surround the building and get ready to storm it and release tear gas. Peter manages to stop any police from getting hurt by knocking out a lot of the gunmen, but a few of them escape through basement tunnels. Peter knows that they plan a big attack tomorrow, but he doesn't know where or when. Just that it will strike at the foundations of government. The next day, whilst attending a speech by Margaret Thatcher, Peter dwells on that comment, foundations, and slips away to check out below the building as Spider-Man. In the sewers, he finds explosives and follows the wires to where the terrorists are hooking up a detonator. He fights the gang for a while until they all go for the plunger to set off the explosive. Peter manages to cut the wires, but their leader throws a grenade. He webs it to a wall and starts to leave, but is shocked to see the leader throw himself on the grenade. Peter gets away from the explosion and muses on the line between commitment and fanaticism. When he meets Joy outside, they see this leader being taken away in an ambulance. They can't believe that he would throw himself on a bomb. Peter and Joy lament the fact that they can't follow the story to Ireland, as J. Jonah Jameson had only authorised them to cover the Thatcher speech. Just then they run into Inspector Bartlett again, the policeman from the beginning of the story, who tells them that the girl who got injured at the airport has actually just died. Joy and Peter share a look and Peter says, "I hear Dublin's nice this time of year." "Jonah's gonna have a fit," Joy says. "I'll go pack. I'll rent a car." the end.
Oh, it's a jolly holiday with Mary. Mary makes your odds so light.
You haven't changed a bit, have you?
When the day is grey and ordinary, Mary makes the sun shine bright.
Oh, honestly.
Oh, happiness is blooming all around her. The daffodils are smiling at the dove. When Mary holds your hand, you feel so grand. Your heart starts beating like a big brass band.
You are lightheaded.
It's a jolly holiday with Mary. No wonder that it's Mary that we love.
So, quite a clever ending, I think. You know, that you know they're going to go to Ireland and find out what happened.
Yeah. So does the next issue go on to that then?
The next issue is a fill-in.
Okay.
Because they fired the editor.
Oh, okay.
So it's... and they were scared of releasing the one that had been got ready.
Yeah.
So what they do is they do a fill-in, and it's Peter remembering a story while he's on a ferry that's going between England and Ireland. So it's like there's like a thing of him and Joy at the beginning going, oh, we're on our way to Ireland because of what's happened.
Yeah.
And he says, all this reminds me of.
Mm.
And then it's a fill-in which they'd obviously prepared in advance.
Mm.
And then it's the following issue. So it takes two issues before you get to the end. Mm. And the following issue apparently has been heavily rewritten from what they were originally planning on releasing. Because obviously the bomb scare scared them enough to think, well, maybe there could be a real bomb next time. Or, you know, somebody could take a hit out on someone. So let's talk about this comic. Shall we start? What I wanted to start with is something that happens quite a lot when I read comics that are set in England but are written by Americans. And that is you get huge errors. You get errors to do with culture where people don't really know our country. And it's something, it's one of those things that always gets my hackles up. I always get a little bit frustrated. And part of me should be like, oh, it's just a story and it doesn't matter. But for some reason, this always irritates me. And there's lots of little things. So I'm just going to go through a quick list and we can talk about them.
Yeah.
So the first one is police carrying guns. We've got Heathrow Airport. We've got police just shooting in the middle of the airport, having a gunfight with terrorists. I mean, the whole thing of how realistic a gunfight in a British airport is at all is odd. But the thing that really gets to me in this is that the police who are carrying the guns are wearing the traditional ceremonial uniform with the silly hat. And the policemen you see in a traditional ceremonial hat are never the ones who carry guns. The ones who carry guns either don't have hats or they have simpler hats, often even baseball caps sometimes. But it's a different type of police who wear a different uniform. So what the Americans have done is thought, policemen with guns, we know what policemen look like in the UK, we know what guns look like, we'll put them together. And actually it's a specific subset of the police who have guns in our country. So it's a small thing, but it's the kind of thing that takes me out of the story.
Yeah.
Then we have accents. We've got Irish accents and British accents in here. You could probably tell when I was doing the bellboy that I was doing a bit of It's a Jolly Holiday with Mary.
Not diagnosed as murder then.
No, but it is Dick Van Dyke.
Yes.
Well spotted.
I know, I could tell.
I know. Well, I'm guessing that guy had become a bellhop when he'd like given up being a chimney sweep.
Or a Dick Van Dyke impressionist.
Yes, yes, indeed. I mean, he's also dressed... I don't know how realistic that is for the 80s, because I've never been to the Dorchester, oddly.
No.
Being a working-class person from Essex. But he appears to be dressed exactly the same as the bellboys in, you know, what's that film called? The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, is that right?
Yeah.
It's that kind of look, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is the one I'm thinking of, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
The with one that's somewhere in Eastern Europe.
With the boy. No, you're thinking of...
No. Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, which...
That's what his outfit's like. It's nothing like what he wears, but it's the same actor.
Oh, okay.
Yes. But yeah, playing a different person. But no, he's very, you know, Mary Poppins, that particular accent. I mean, there's a little bit of it as well with Inspector Bartlett's accent, but that's not quite as grating. But he drops a lot of G's. There's not many G's on his... And yet, you know, Peter Parker, who was brought up in Queens in New York, has not got an accent and doesn't drop G's.
No, no.
Which is a choice. Obviously, there's a bad history, which I discussed when we were talking about the comic in advance.
Yeah.
You know, that is a real issue and something that really stood out to me, even when I was reading it as a child, you know, at the age of 12.
Mm.
Because obviously being brought up in the 80s, well, born in the 70s and brought up in the 80s, you couldn't help but know a little bit about the Troubles, which is what we tend to euphemistically call the Northern Ireland crisis of the 70s and 80s and early 90s. Mm. Actually, probably up to mid-90s, isn't it? The bomb in Manchester was 1997. So it was 2 weeks before I moved into Manchester. No, 1996. 2 weeks before I moved to Manchester.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yes. Manchester was in a bit of a state when I moved there. That wasn't why I moved there. There's the whole thing with the money.
Yeah.
That was very annoying. So he's using old money. He's talking about farthings and bobs. That money was taken out of circulation in 1971. So he's talking about something that's more than 15 years out of date. So actually that bellboy isn't going to feel rich when he gets that money. He's going to feel conned because he can't spend it because it's old money.
Oh, I... So to be honest, I thought that they were all... So because we've discussed... Have we discussed this previously? I can't remember. I thought they had the right money.
Yeah.
And they decided that it that we were still in pounds, shillings and pence since in that period. But what you've interpreted it as, Peter Parker had money previously from another trip that he'd done to
well,
the UK.
Well, there's two choices. And he's either done that or he doesn't know what our currency is.
Yes.
You know, but... I'm interpreting it like that because that's funnier, the idea that they're giving, like, odd money that's out of date to this guy. One of the other things that's felt wrong culturally was the fact that the person handing over the secretive information to Joy was wearing a bowler hat.
Right,
you know, it's not a way of disguising yourself particularly, it's a way of drawing attention to yourself wearing a bowler hat. It actually isn't that common an item for someone to wear in the 80s. When the Irish meeting is kind of interrupted by the police, they say the crack anti-terror troops are there and they're called the M5, which is a motorway.
Yes.
You know, or highway, I suppose, if you're American.
Which may or may not go to the southeast of England.
I thought it was the southwest. West. Shall I look it up while we're chatting?
Might as well.
Yeah, so let's have a look. M5... motorway.
Like the BBC, we like to inform, educate and...
Yes, the M5 motorway links the Midlands to the southwest. So I thought it went that way. I didn't realise it went from... Apparently it starts at West Bromwich, which is near Birmingham. Or is a bit of Birmingham.
Hello,
and it ends in Exeter in Devon. I have been to Exeter, but I went there by train. Our cat Mr. Bumble is joining the podcast.
What do you think of...
What do you think about comics from 1986? He's licking his toes. I don't know what that means.
That probably means I think he likes them.
Yes, I think he likes Irigel.
Spiders. Spiders are a bit creepy, aren't they, Mr. Bumble?
Oh, I expect he would eat spiders.
Yum.
He might even eat Peter Parker if he got his hands on him.
Oh, I think we'd all eat with Peter Parker.
That's a bit of a weird thing to say. Particularly as I think the current Peter Parker actor is young enough to be our child.
Who is he?
What's he called? Oh, you know, the one who's that comedian's son.
No.
No. You do know.
I quite liked the first one.
Did you like Tobey Maguire?
No,
Or when you say the first one, do you mean the one from the one who used to be one of the Von Trapp children?
It looks like it's snowing, but... No, don't tread on.
No, I think it's just rain.
Peter Parker, don't
just rain. It's currently Tom Holland.
Oh, is he...
But it has previously been Tobey Maguire.
No, the one who I saw...
No, you like the other English one, do you? Oh, who you saw in the play.
Yeah.
Oh, what's he called? Oh, I know who you mean. You saw... What play was it? You saw Angels in America,
yeah,
isn't it, wasn't
he? Yeah,
he
was very good in that.
Yeah, and he is... He is Andrew Garfield.
Garfield.
I'm Cat. Googling at the moment and I'm not Cat. Quite convinced.
Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
Also the name of an American president.
Was he actually called Andrew as well, Garfield? The president.
Okay, maybe not.
I don't know. I have no idea. My knowledge of...
Since we're taking...
My American presidential knowledge is a little weak, let's put it that way.
Is it still going, the thingy?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we're talking about things that are wrong. Well, I'm talking about things that are wrong.
Yeah.
Because Mr. Bumble has left us. Our cat has now gone to lie down.
Yes, it's...
In a restful place.
It's hard work.
And just listen to us recording rather than taking part.
He'll learn something.
He will. He'll learn lots of things about the 1980s. Mm. And about comics.
Mm.
So, we had M5, the crack troops, which come from the motorway, I'm guessing. There is a bit where they get out of the hotel and they get in a yellow taxi. Now, I don't know if we should blame that on the artist or more on the colourist. Taxis in the UK tend to be black cabs, particularly in London.
Mm.
But not always black. Sometimes they have big adverts on them for things like Spider-Man, in fact. Mm. But not only is there a yellow taxi that drives them, and on its route it drives them past Tower Bridge, which is a nice
bridge.
Yes, I don't really want to say a nice bridge. What I mean is it's something that's recognisable. It's a good strong
good job it wasn't
landmark. That's the word I'm looking for.
Good job it wasn't London Bridge, because the Americans have got it.
Well, they've got one of the London bridges. They haven't got the London Bridge that we cross more regularly near the train station.
Because otherwise we get our fingers, our toes wet.
Exactly. But not only are they in a yellow taxi going past Tower Bridge, but that yellow taxi is driving on the right-hand side of the road.
Yeah.
Which, again, is wrong. We drive on the left-hand side of the road in the UK. So, yes, that got me a bit annoyed. And the last one, it's a minor one.
Mm.
But they go to the Houses of Parliament to see Margaret Thatcher do a speech.
Mm.
And she does that speech in a conference room in the Houses of Parliament. We've been to the Houses of Parliament.
Yes, we have.
We've visited our MP.
Many a time.
Well, I've only done it once. You've done it many a time.
The lovely Meg Hillier.
Meg Hillier. We went to visit Meg Hillier, who's also...
Lovely.
Yes, she is lovely.
She's
got the biggest private office within the Houses of Parliament.
Because?
Because she is the head of one of the committees. What committee?
Yeah.
Can't remember what it's called.
The money.
It's something to do with finance, but it's not called the Finance Committee. Okay. It's called Treasury Select Committee or something.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Hopefully she doesn't listen to this podcast.
Yes, I think if my MP does listen to this, she'll probably have other things to say.
Okay.
But, no, we went and visited. It was for LGBT history.
Yes.
Week, month? Was it a month? It was a month. Was it a month or was it a week?
A week.
Okay, LGBT... History month. We went to visit on that. She did a little kind of thing for members of her constituency who were LGBT plus.
Yeah.
And we went along and there were about 30 of us in this very small office. It was very soon before COVID as well, wasn't it?
Mm,
so yes. I remember coming out there and hearing that a week or so later, hearing that COVID was going crazy and be like, oh, I was in a tiny room with lots of people. And that was the biggest office. And there's definitely not an office big enough to be the one that was shown in that comic.
No.
If she's got the biggest office. The only place that would be big enough would be to actually do it in Parliament within the chamber.
Yeah.
Which I suppose they could have done that and put Joy and Peter into the gallery, but then I don't know how you'd be able to get them being near Thatcher, and I can kind of understand why they did it wrong.
And do you think it's because, I don't know what the Americans used to do back then, but...
I think Americans have... They have places, you know, everything's much newer. Actually, it's not that much newer, is it? The White House and the Houses of Parliament are similar.
I don't know where in the White House.
Ages, aren't they?
Yeah.
They must be, because the Houses of Parliament were built in, the 1870s?
70s, yeah.
Yeah, sometime in the 1900s, no, in the 19th century. Not the 1900s, that's different, that's the 20th century. It's very confusing history. No wonder John Mercado got it wrong. But yeah, it's yeah, maybe it's not older really. But yeah, it's very small rooms, so there wouldn't be a conference room. So there are just a number of small things. And what I find with this, and I sometimes say that I don't think Americans should be allowed to write comics that are set in the UK. And it's something I feel today as well. You know, there's a regular series that comes out from Marvel that's part of the X-Men range, and I like myself an X-Men comic, and I follow them to an extent. I read some of the X-Men books, and I've definitely been following along. There's kind of a podcast friend called Chris Sheehan, who, I think I'm pronouncing Sheehan wrong. Chris, anyway. And his website is Chris is on Infinite Earths. And he does a podcast called X-Lapse, where he's going back looking at X-Men. He'd left the X-Men for a bit, so he was X-Lapsed, and he's gone back to the X-Men. And he goes through all the X-Men books, and I've been tending to go on his website and comment on the episodes, and he reads my comments, and there's kind of sharing, which is always fun. And if anyone wants to do that with us, you can go to, we have a little blog spot.
We do.
Which is shouldilovethis.blogspot.com, where you can put a comment on the episode, and then we'll read your comments and talk about that the next episode. But I'm quite involved in that, so I've read every issue of Excalibur. One of the people who's been doing it, I read them on Marvel Unlimited because I'm not spending money on Excalibur anymore. It's not a particularly good book. But one of my issues with Excalibur as I read it is it's written by an American. Mm-hmm. And it's an American who knows nothing about Britain, as far as I can tell. You know, and regardless of how good or bad the stories are, how much I would like them without that, I get pulled out the story by the inaccuracies of getting Britain wrong.
Mm.
You know, and the same thing's happening with this story. And then it starts me kind of thinking about the world in general, and this kind of, I think we can sometimes have an almost cultural colonialism. Mm. Can I say that?
You can try.
Cultural colonialism.
There you go.
Yes. Which is where, you know, one culture has power over another, I think, would be the way of putting it. And it means that they don't really care about somebody else's.
Mm.
So an American writing about Britain, as long as it's vaguely British, that's enough.
Mm.
You know, and I think you see that a lot in comics. You know, there's a very famous, people share a page from an issue of Rom Space Night quite a lot,
mm,
where Rom goes to Wales and it looks like a Wild West town from America.
Yep.
It's just like they've gone back in time.
Mm.
But even like old places in Wales don't look like Wild West towns because it's a different place and there's different natural resources and what you build houses out of was different, less space, so things are more tiny. You know, you tend not to have big streets between things. And then it gets me thinking about, you know, they do it to us in Britain. Who are we in Britain doing it to?
Yes, yes.
You know, and it makes you kind of slightly interrogate how comics treat other nations. You know, when people go to Africa, when people go to China, when people go to Australia or wherever in a story, is our lack of knowledge and awareness and empathy with people from that nation affecting how the story's told?
Yes.
In the same way, and, you know, I do think there's a thing I read years ago, and it was in an introduction to a collection of Alan Moore's Swamp Thing stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I want to say it was written by Neil Gaiman, before he was Neil Gaiman, before he was a famous writer.
Mm-hmm.
He was just somebody writing an introduction on a collection of Alan Moore books.
Mm.
It might not have been him, but it was someone similar. And they were saying about how Americans were surprised that Alan Moore could get to the heart of America.
Mm.
And he referenced this theory, this was Neil Gaiman, that Britons know more about Americans than Americans know about Britons. Because your culture is more all-powerful. So we see your culture all the time. We know America.
Mm.
But America doesn't necessarily see Britain as well. They see little bits of Britain. I don't know if that's true, but he drew it out into that thing where, you know, women know more about men than men know about women. Gay people know more about straight people than straight people know about gay people.
Mm.
Black people know more about white people than white people know about black people. Mm. And he was making that kind of comparison. And I think, you know, there is an element of this kind of story where you think, what else are they getting wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what else am I taking in and just reading on face level that's actually slightly twisted or slightly...
Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
Wrong. Mm-hmm. So there's something about this kind of storytelling, even though, you know, in some part of it is just funny to me that they put them in a yellow taxi, which you don't have in the UK.
Yeah.
That is funny, but it's also, what else am I taking in that I'm accepting that I shouldn't be accepting?
Yeah.
That isn't accurate. So I think that's something to pause and think about. And I think it's probably a good thing to talk about before we go into our scoring.
Mm-hmm.
Because actually, overall, just read on a level of the story, if I take out the things that gets wrong about Britain, and most of them you could overlook. You know, it is funny, the scene where he's with the bellboy is funny.
Yeah.
The fact that the bellboy is a stereotype, the fact that he's wrong about the money, even with all that, it's still amusing.
Yeah.
You know, it's amusing even though it's inaccurate, you know. And if you take out the details about the history, it is true that in the 80s, there were members of the IRA who were trying to destroy the British establishment in various ways.
Mm-hmm.
And they had various different ways of doing it, and setting bombs was one of the way, attacking people, attacking civilians, as well as attacking police and politicians was one of the things they did.
Mm.
So there's a truth behind it. And the story itself is quite entertaining.
Mm, yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So let's move on. Do you want to say anything in general about the story, or do you just want to move on and look at the categories that we usually review?
Let's go for the categories, and then we can talk about...
Well, we're going to discuss more, right? Yeah. We always discuss too much.
What we can discuss about what we thought about the story through the categories.
Yeah, definitely. So our first category that we normally score, and just a reminder for anyone who hasn't listened in a while or hasn't listened to one of our Should I Love This era episodes, in the Should I Love This era, we're looking at five categories, and we give 5 points. First four categories, we give 5 points maximum each. So the maximum they can get on that is that right? Have I got the right number? 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
Five categories. Yeah. We give them a score out of 5 on each. So it's out of a possible 10. So the maximum on the four categories is 40.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fifth category is one where we take points off. Because it's about how much bad stuff is in there. So first one's good stuff. We're giving points for good stuff. Then we take points away for bad stuff. So our first category is accessibility. We're reading these as new comics. And one of the key points with this era, the reason I'm focusing on this era, is it was the first month that I bought a lot of American comics.
Okay.
So the month before, I'd got, I think, about 3 comics. I'd got a Fantastic Four, I'd got an X-Men, I think. No, it was X-Factor I got.
Mm.
And one other that I can't remember what it was. It will come to me when we're reading other ones. But I got like 3 or 4 comics. And then this month was the first time I kind of saw them all arrive in the shop.
Mm.
And I gradually picked up most of them. And the fact that they all had these similar covers really made them stand out. So these were the first ones I read. And the question is, are they good introductions?
Mm.
So accessibility, out of 5 for each of us. How well does this introduce us to all the characters in it? How well does it read to someone who's never read Web of Spider-Man before? What's your score there?
Out of 5.
You're giving it a 5.
Mm.
I also gave it a 5, so that gets a 10 out of 10 for accessibility. It's very, very clear. David Michelinie was a very accomplished writer. He'd been writing comics for about 10 years by this point. Possibly a bit longer, actually. He might have been more like 72, 73. He'd had some really acclaimed runs. He co-wrote with Bob Layton, who we've mentioned on other stories, a run of Iron Man, and he was about to go back to Iron Man, actually, that was really well received and was the basis of a lot of what went into the Iron Man films.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a run on the Star Wars book that I was reading in the UK reprints of. He was kind of writing that in between The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. So he wrote a lot of the stories that were set in that era that were really good. He had a long run on Avengers, which included Avengers number 200. He had quite a prominent run on there. So he'd done a lot of writing and he knew what he was doing. And he was very good at making things understandable, explaining without, weirdly, didn't feel as dialogue heavy or as caption heavy as some of the other comics we've read.
Right, yeah.
But it did explain everything. It told Peter was, it told you who Joy was, it told you what they were doing, they're on an assignment for Now magazine, it introduces the other characters. I think it was very clear, accessible.
Yeah, totally.
And actually the art was very easy to read. Mark Silvestri's art, very clear.
So
5 out of 5, 10 out of 10 between the two of us. So the next one is artwork, which we give a score out of 5 to. And I've just said the artwork was very clear, but because I'm a contrary kind of person, I only gave it a 3 out of 5, and I don't know if I'm being unfair. What do you think? Out of 5, what would you give it?
I would give it a 4.
Yeah, I think maybe I was a bit mean giving it a 3. And my reasons, there's two things. One of it is the stereotype. I felt I had to take something off for how stereotypically English and Irish some of the characters look.
Look or...
move. And I know that's in the story as well, and he's telling the story. But I just felt, that it was slightly wrong.
Okay.
But the main thing I scored it down for was the inking. The inking was inconsistent.
Okay.
I mentioned at the beginning, when I was going through the credits, that there's 4 inkers we know worked on this. Because there were no credits put on the comic. I've mentioned that already, haven't I?
Yeah,
they didn't put credits in this comic. It was an accident. They were left off. But it was one of those books where lots of different people got together and inked it. It must have been running late or, someone was sick or something and they had to give pages to different inkers. And what that means is from page to page, how the same character looks changes quite a lot. And because Mark Silvestri's style is quite, it's quite expressive and cartoony, the way that you finish it, the way you ink it, really changes it. And amongst the inkers, the ones that I know have said, I did pages of this, who have shared things and said, I ink this, I ink that. Art Nichols, Kyle Baker, Bob McLeod, and Joseph Rubinstein. And those 4 artists, I don't think you could come up with, well, at least 3 of them, you couldn't come up with more dissimilar inkers. Bob McLeod's stuff is really, really clean, really, really smooth. Then you've got Kyle Baker, who's got quite a kind of blurry, kind of cartoony, slightly like a graphic style. And then you've got Joseph Rubinstein, whose stuff is very classic Marvel. And in fairness, you've got Art Nichols, who used to be Joseph Rubinstein's assistant. So he's got a similar style to Joe Rubinstein, but he's kind of Joe Rubinstein, but moving in like a younger, more edgy way. So his is a bit more like Kyle Baker's. He's kind of between the two. But those 3 main styles are really different. And for me, that really, I turn the page and suddenly the art's different.
Okay.
And maybe that's just because I'm really into comics art and I really notice the details.
Yeah, yeah.
But that has made me score it down.
Okay.
I mean, could you see the difference or not? No, really?
Not really.
So if I was like that page there.
Yeah.
Is clearly inked by Kyle Baker. So it's kind of, it's got kind of quite a graphic thing in the black.
Okay.
But there's also like a blurring on details and kind of a smudginess at times on the way that he does, particularly the way he kind of does a grey, and he'll leave like a line out. It's either done very, very thinly, or he just leaves the line at the end of something out and just lets the colourist do it. And then if we turn, let's turn the page to one of the Bob McLeod ones. So that page there is Bob McLeod.
Okay, yeah.
And it's much smoother, much cleaner.
Yeah, I can...
You can see that. And then if we go, like, the last page is the one that's really obviously Joseph Rubinstein. Very traditional Marvel. Much thicker lines, much more kind of definite. I mean, it really does change the way... Where I notice it most of all, actually, is the hair. You know, you really notice it in the changing of the hair. So, yeah, I scored it down for that. But still, it's getting 7 out of 10. That's pretty good.
Yeah,
it's a pretty good art scoring. Characterisation, what are you giving it out of 5?
I didn't think there was much emotional content or... there's the child dying.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, for me, the only characters who had true motivations are Peter Parker and Joe Mercado, the recurring characters, who are regularly in this book.
Mm.
You know, in this book, at this point, Web of Spider-Man is very much about when he goes out of town with Joy on these Now magazine articles, because he's a photographer. So those stories are about that. You know, Amazing Spider-Man at the time was about the kind of classic superhero-y stuff. And Peter Parker Spider-Man, which we haven't got to yet, but that one, at that point, was more about adventures that took place at night and were a bit darker. So they kind of had the superhero, the darker stuff, and then the travelling stuff, the going off and doing something stuff. And the only regular characters in this particular book most of the time were Peter and Joy.
Yeah.
You know, everyone else would be the issue of the week that they've been sent to. They've been sent to look into a mining thing, or they've been sent to look into... there's a story before that's a mining accident, and then there's this one they're sent to see Margaret Thatcher do a speech about terrorism, and that's it. You know, and the idea, and actually the run doesn't last very long because of it falling apart, but that was the plan, that they go to different places. And I think the issue you get is wherever they go, the characters that are specific to that one place are very stereotypical, and they exist just for a plot reason.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's these people, whether it's, you know, in the mining disaster one, there's like a woman and a child and her husband's died in a mining accident. And, you know, it's a very stereotypical view as well. You know, here, the woman kind of screaming over her daughter who's nearly dead.
Yeah.
You know, the police officer is kind of vague. He's just like, angry, get your head down, girl.
Yeah.
And then tells them that someone's died. You know, the bellhop is very much a caricature.
Yeah.
The Irish characters, they're just going up the rebels all the time. You know, it's very... Yeah, the characterisation only happens with the main characters.
Mm.
Which we've seen in other... we've read other comics where... Mm. One or two characters have really strong characterization and others don't.
Mm, mm.
So the score I gave it 2 out of 5, which, again, maybe I'm being harsh, but I basically thought I can give it 1 point for Peter Parker and 1 point for Joy Mercado.
Yeah.
And no other points. Now, maybe because they're well done, maybe I should have gone higher, but that's how I felt at the time I scored it. How do you feel? What would you go for 4 out of 5? I suspect you're going to be more flattering than I have been.
Let's give it a 3.
So a 3 out of 5 for you. So that overall gives that a 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
So that is quite a drop.
Okay, yeah. As I say, I...
Particularly when we said, you know, the accessibility was 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
So obviously, in the writing of this, they're caring more about the accessibility than the reality of every character. You know, their focus is on their core characters. Which, you know, is a choice you can make.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it's not uncommon to watch a film or something where there's 2 or 3 characters who are really well drawn and everyone else is just almost like a supporting artist, you know.
Mm.
How about the cover out of 5? What we're giving this cover? Now,
2.
For those of you who haven't seen it, Erica's already said 2, but I wanted to describe this. Okay. So we've talked before about how the covers for this month, they all have the same border, which is a border of all the Marvel heroes. And then the middle bit is meant to be like a face picture of one character from that book.
Mm.
So Spider-Man had 4 books, so they've got to do 4 covers. Now, we scored it quite lowly on the last one, and it was Spider-Man in his black costume, but he was upside down and he's waving at you.
Mm.
This one, it's just a picture of the Spider-Man logo, a completely perfect circle with his eyes and like the spider webbing on it, which is the thing he has, like a little torch on his waist that he shines sometimes, and it puts an image of a spider. It's a bit like the Bat Signal, but the Spider-Man version. And that's what you've got a picture of.
See, I haven't got that, you see.
But it's just...
Yeah.
It's like a... It looks like a dartboard that's been changed to look like Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Effectively. It's not really a picture, I would say. I was even more harsh than you were ago. You've given 2 out of 5. I gave 1 out of 5. I think this is the worst one of these covers that we're going to see.
If we're being charitable, because, you know, it tells you all you need to know.
It tells you it's a Spider-Man book.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, there are things I could be more charitable about. I actually really like this Web of Spider-Man logo.
Yeah.
And there's a really interesting thing in the Spider-Man books. Mm. And actually, those articles that I was quoting on at the beginning by Christopher Priest, he does this thing about how he wanted all of the Spider-Man books to have different identities. Mm. And they had dissimilar logos. And as soon as he leaves, they've all got the same... The word Spider-Man is in the same... is exactly the same on every single one. And just where it says Web of or Amazing, it's in the same font, but it's just different words. So I quite like this logo, that where the words Web of out of web.
I like...
And there's a little spider hanging down from the logo.
There is there, yeah.
So that I like.
Yeah.
I never liked that corner box image, though.
That one.
Yeah, it's Spider-Man in the black costume.
Yeah, it's a bit like, what is it?
The way they've drawn it, the angle he's at, you can't see the spider logo.
And he looks like he's got a tail. A
little bit. You can't see the spider logo on his chest. Which is the problem with the black costume, is that if your arm's over it, you can't see that anymore. And also, it's something they quite regularly did, but I think it looks really odd, is they would leave the soles of his feet as they'd be drawn as though they were white and they'd just be coloured in blue, which I think looks really odd.
Okay.
And I know they quite often colour black, highlights of black as blue, is something they do in comics all the time. But I just think that looks really odd, and I think colour-wise this cover doesn't work as well as some of the other simple ones. You know, the Daredevil one was very, very simple with the red, but just something about the colour of the logo, the colour of the background, it all came together, I think, much better than this does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm going with 1 out of 5. You've went 2 out of 5, so we're 3 out of 5.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then that gives us a total so far of 25 for the positive ones. But then we've got the negative. So we have a category, we call it Acceptable in the 80s, because we do like taking a song and, you know, stealing its title. And that's the points we take off for things that were okay in the 80s that wouldn't be okay now. And this is where I'm really, really torn about what to take off.
Yes.
My problem with this issue is I am annoyed that they got England wrong.
Okay.
And that is something I feel like I should take scores off.
Okay.
As being something that was acceptable in the 80s that wouldn't be acceptable now. But I was talking earlier about the comic Excalibur. That comes out at the moment. They come out currently, week on week, month on month. Marvel are releasing it. And it has equally as bad depictions of the UK, but that are created in 2021. So can I take points off for it being acceptable in the 80s if it's still acceptable now?
Yeah.
That's the question. And, you know, I think I probably can, but it isn't the kind of stuff that's become unacceptable in between. You know... This isn't full of sexism, it isn't full of racism, it isn't full of... There's nothing to do with Indigenous peoples, there's nothing... You know, we've seen things in other ones of these comics that have been really quite shocking. And there's none of that going on.
No.
In this. But ultimately, I took 2 points off, out of taking off a maximum of 5.
Okay.
What would you do? What would you take off?
I would take off...
Or would you take nothing off? Would you say, actually... Because you were much less bothered by the British stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything else. Do you think there's any... I mean, some people would argue that the fact that Joy is very sexy in the art is sexist. But I don't know if it is, because she was always drawn sexy. And other characters weren't always drawn sexy. I mean, Margaret Thatcher isn't drawn as sexy. It isn't that thing where every female character is sexy, which you get some of the time. What do you think? Would you take something off, or would you not?
I thought it was... All round, I thought it was a nice comic. There was nothing too, sort of, you know...
It was such a... I mean, the only thing that I recall you saying to me when you were reading it that you were surprised by or shocked by in a bad way, was that description of what caused the problems in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Would you take a point off for that, or would you not?
No. I mean, there again, I think if you were, you know, if you were particularly bothered about historical accuracies, like you seem to be.
Well, I'm not that bothered by the historical accuracy, but it annoyed me.
Let's be fair.
And it's...
let's be fair, there's a man who can climb buildings on...
Yes.
So, you know, it could be an alternative universe, whatever. As an 11-year-old boy, I don't think I would have been that bothered by it. As a 21-year-old boy, I'm not that bothered by it either.
Good luck convincing the world you're 21, darling.
Divorce.
So do you think we should take no points off?
I'm not shocked and horrified on my own behalf, if you know what I mean. Sort of like, and I think it's probably easier to be shocked and horrified on other people's behalf.
Well, as I've been a bit harsh by taking two off, you take none off, and then that's a bit like we've taken one off each. Okay, so that gives us a grand total of 23, which puts Web of Spider-Man near the bottom of the ones we've scored so far. So our top one remains Fantastic Four. It's Daredevil. Then it's Amazing Spider-Man. Then it's Web of Spider-Man with 23 points. Then it's X-Factor.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, you know, I'm still shocked and dismayed by that I had to score down X Factor because of the racism when I love that comic so much. But, you know.
Yeah.
I'm probably right. Now, that just brings us one last question. Should I love this comic?
I think as a comic, as an entry, and as an entry into comics, I enjoyed it. I disappointed to find out they're not going to Ireland in the next comic. Or they are.
Well, it's two issues away. They take a issue out, and it's quite funny. He sneezes on the. I didn't tell you this. He sneezes on the ferry, and he actually goes, "Oh, I feel like I'm getting a cold. I remember when I had a cold before," and it's a story where he's got a cold. No, genuinely, I'm not making that up.
Oh, really? Oh, maybe I should read it.
Yeah, it's quite fun, actually. It's a film, but it's a fun one.
Yeah.
It's actually one that's written by a guy who's currently suing Marvel.
Oh, okay.
It's just come out recently that a guy called Larry Lieber is suing Marvel, and he was actually Stan Lee's younger brother.
Oh, okay.
But he wrote and drew some comics for Marvel, and he wrote and drew the next issue of Web of Spider-Man. And actually, a couple of months later, another one. I think he was doing fill-ins at this point in time as a way of making a bit of extra money. He spent a long time doing original material for Marvel UK, actually, when they used to make that in America and send it over. But no, anyway, he sued Marvel because he created Iron Man and Thor in many ways, or co-created them and need some money, probably. But yeah, this is coming out. I think my final thing on it, should I love this comic? It's a weird one because obviously I love this era. This is not one of my favourite comics of that era.
Mm.
It's not one I took to heart. Like this, okay. I got this one at the first. It's not one of the ones I filled in between. I had this since November 1986. I bought it then.
Mm. Perhaps the test
But the other one, The Amazing Spider-Man that I read, I loved.
Mm.
And this I thought was good, but I love that Amazing Spider-Man. So it's not one that I loved, but I think it stands up. It's a good comic.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the fact that it's in fourth place out of five probably just says that the comics were quite good in that era.
Mm.
You know, rather than that this is a bad comic.
Have you reread it several times since?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I got the following issue. So, you know, I said the following issue was a fill-in.
Yeah.
I did not see the issue after that, so I didn't get the second part of the story until much later.
Okay.
So that's one I probably only got about... When was it? Actually, it was probably about 10 years ago I was starting to fill in my issues of Web of Spider-Man.
Okay.
Because you could find them quite cheaply once they'd cancelled the title. Because it ran for something like 100 issues, and this is issue 20. Mm. I was able to fill in a lot of the missing issues. And I went and found them because a lot of them were drawn by Mark Silvestri, who we've discussed is an artist whose work I love. And I want, you know, there's something quite interesting about seeing the early work of an artist you like.
Mm.
So I went and filled in the issues. And when I read the second part, I reread the first. But I did that before I'd heard about the controversy. Like, I knew there was an issue in between, but, you know, my normal fan reaction to that is, oh, well, they must have been running late. And then at a later point, I discovered all this stuff about the IRA and the bomb scare and this leader. This is why, you know, Christopher Priest got fired. This is part of why Jim Shooter ends up getting fired about 6 months down the line.
Mm.
You know, that this is involved in that. I didn't know that when I read the story.
Mm.
Yeah, the second part is interesting. It's much more, it makes it more about the business rather than the terrorism. Mm.
Mm.
So Roxham is obviously planned. It's there in this story.
Okay.
She gets given a Roxxon envelope.
Yes. Yeah.
And Roxxon are quite a famous, within Marvel Comics, they're like the evil business. You know, they're like the business that's behind it all. Do you know what I mean? You know,
yeah,
like
yeah, how yeah.
There's got to be an evil corporation, hasn't there? And they're the evil corporation. And they're quite famous. They go back like decades and they would come out in different things. It's more about them than it is about Irish nationalism.
Mm.
You know, things that are happening, it's business people getting other people to kill each other. That's
right.
What they make it in the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good comic. Yeah. I think it stands up. So, should I love this? Yes, I should. It's a good comic.
Yeah.
I'm going to finish by just saying goodbye to our listeners. And thank you very much for listening. And we'll be with you hopefully sooner, because it's been quite a gap since the last one. My aim is that we do one of these every fortnight, and I haven't been achieving that recently. But we're going to be back in a fortnight. We're going to do another one of this era.
We are.
I want to go off somewhere where we haven't been yet. So a bit of the Marvel Universe we haven't done. So we've done two Spider-Mans already.
Yeah.
We've done an X-Men. We've done a Fantastic Four. We've done a Thor. I think we may go for an Avengers, or we may do, oh, I don't know. I don't want to do X-Men yet, because we've got an X-Men book already.
We can keep it as a surprise.
Yeah, let's keep it as a surprise. But we're going to be somewhere within this era.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, everyone, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Recording myself saying, oh no, that's not right. So this is going well. A few more like that and I can bloody retire.
It's almost like you're an East End Barrow boy.
I know.
excuse me.
Sorry.
That was my Kenneth Williams for anybody who...
No, it's Kenneth Branagh.
What?
I said it's not your Kenneth Branagh.
No.
Because that was funny in my head, which it isn't, really. A few more like that and I can bloody retire!